ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 72nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm really glad you're listening. I get to interview one of my very favorite comic writers of all time, Chuck Dixon, probably best known for his work on G.I. Joe, Batman, The Simpsons, and other comics. We talk about what he's working on currently, as well as some of his past projects, and we even delve a little bit into The Dark Knight Rises and the Bane character. He's got a lot of fun things to say, and I had a great time talking with him, so I'm sure you'll enjoy that interview. Then I review this week's comics, followed by my monthly talk with Pete Casazza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland, seeing how September did. Everything concludes with Gianluca Glaser as we discuss the latest news and previews. So, since we've got a lot to get to, let's get to it.
Yo, Joe!
He'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
It's G.I. Joe against Cobra the enemy. To save the day, he never gets up, he's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air.
G.I. Joe!
I want to welcome to the podcast one of my very favorite comics writers, Chuck Dixon, who has written many things that I've enjoyed, including a lot of the Batman characters, G.I. Joe, Conan, many other good things. It'd probably take me 20 minutes just to list it all. So how are you doing today, Chuck?
I'm just fine. Just fine.
Great. It's good to talk with you. I thought we would talk a little bit about some of the current projects you're working on before we go back a little bit. I was interested. I was reading Airboy Deadeye, which was your second time doing that character, a very classic comics character. Do you want to talk a little bit about that series?
Well, Gianluca Peretta, who's an Italian comic book writer and editor, he met me on Facebook and asked me if I would like to co-write an Airboy story, and he had found a home for it at Antarctic. And getting an opportunity to work with Ben Dunn again was, you know, that's a no-brainer for me. I loved working with Ben the one time we did at Eclipse years ago. And it all just sort of came together out of fanboy love, basically.
That was great, because it was a little different from other comics that are out today, and that was black and white. You don't get many of those these days. But it was also great to see a classic character come back, and he was set in a post-World War II era, which I thought was interesting, as normally those kinds of characters are in the middle of World War II. Was that on purpose to take him someplace where we hadn't seen him very often before?
Well, Gianluca suggested that because he had a bunch of European publishers lined up, and he thought that post-war might be more appealing to that audience. And, most of Airboy's adventures actually happened after the war anyway, so it was a good fit. And I thought visiting post-war Japan and then mixing it up with Ben Dunn on a semi-manga style with a giant robot and all the rest of it was kind of irresistible.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun because it's a great little story. I like the fact that he relates with folks in Japan post-war, and they basically, they bond because they've both been through the war, been on different sides, but they get to know each other because of their experiences. They share those kinds of things. And it was a really interesting and fun thing to read that. You know, it was a 3-issue miniseries, right?
No, it's actually a 5-issue. The 4th issue just came out.
So, oh, great,
so
great.
We haven't even wrapped it up yet.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because I found it a little hard to get. Antarctica Press is something that some of my local stores don't get, so I have to dig around a little to find it. But I'm glad to get it when I can, and I've been reading it and really enjoying it, so I'm glad it's 5 issues. Is there any hope of putting that into a trade?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's the nature of the business now. You know, you work toward the trade because that's where the sales are, you know, because trades are evergreen in bookstores and stuff. But, you know, you defer costs by doing the monthlies.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, yeah, there's absolutely going to do it as a trade.
Any chance of doing any more Airboy after this?
Yes. In fact, I was just talking with Gianluca today, and I'm in talks with other people, and definitely going to be more Airboy in the future.
Great. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because he's a great character, and he's a lot of fun to read. And I think you tell his stories really, really well, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've always liked the character. I first read about him in Steranko's History of the Comics, Mm-hmm. And I got fascinated then. And then when I was younger, it wasn't that hard to find his Golden Age comics. You could mm-hmm. find them around because Airboy is one of those characters who was very popular at the time and then sort of forgotten for a long time. His sales rivaled Batman and Superman sales when he was
on oh, wow.
vacation. And so there were, you know, a lot of copies around. So, it, you know, even as late as the 70s and 80s, they weren't that hard to find.
Very cool. Very cool. So is it going to remain a black and white comic as it comes out?
I don't know. We're talking a lot because the European publishers have taken to it. So that sort of leaves us some leeway as to how we're going to do the next one so we can make some more decisions. Because, you know, the first one, you know, quite frankly, was a shot in the dark just to see what kind of reaction we'd get.
Mm-hmm.
But next time we can go at it with a little bit more earnest.
It'll be another miniseries, you think, instead of an ongoing?
Yeah, miniseries are the way to go because of the trade. You know, you're working toward the trade.
Okay, well, that's very good. I'll look forward to that. Are there any other projects you're working on currently that we should know about?
Well, I'm still on G.I. Joe and Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still doing work for The Simpsons now and then for Bongo.
Wow. It couldn't be much more different than G.I. Joe and The Simpsons.
No, I pride myself on being versatile. and well, the job security is important.
Yeah.
So you got to be able to do more than one thing.
You won't ever have a crossover, though, I don't think.
No, I don't think either side would be interested in that.
Well, it's interesting because G.I. Joe, you've written G.I. Joe for quite some time now.
Yes.
And that's a great thing. I'm interested, why are you doing the current series? Does it have a different feel to the ones you've done in the past?
Well, the current stuff it's a different continuity than what Larry Hama laid down at Marvel. And Larry is continuing his own continuity in his own book. But I was offered the opportunity to do a soft reboot. And I'm still loyal to everything Larry did. We made some very minor changes to the characters. And we set it in a somewhat different world. I mean, Cobra is slightly different. But the biggest thing for us was to be able to start the franchise over. With the luxury of introducing Cobra as this mystery organization whose scope and threat is revealed over time. And that's something that Larry couldn't do because Larry was tied to toy releases. So he had to basically bring G.I. Joe and Cobra on stage simultaneously to match, you know, the toys as they came out. And that's what he had to do, and he did an absolutely amazing job. I mean, I always say it's a toy tie-in comic that's much better than a toy tie-in comic deserves to be because he put so much heart into it and so much thought, I mean, and his unique brand of humor into it. But I'm not tied to that. I'm not tied to toy releases at all. So we basically have all of the huge playground that Larry created to play in however we want to play in it.
I guess that must have been a lot of fun for you to understand some of it and yet put your own spin on it.
Yeah, it was especially cool because my first big break was working at Marvel with Larry as my editor. So I was working there as he was like in his third year of doing G.I. Joe and sort of getting to meet him and understand, you know, why Joe was the way it is. I mean, Joe is very Larry. Joe is very Larry Hama, the way Spider-Man is very Steve Ditko. I mean, it's just the two are linked together, and it's a creation no one else could have created but him in the way it came out. And so it was kind of neat, you know, all these years later when IDW asked me if I wanted to come on board, Larry was going to write a book and I was going to write a book, and I instantly leapt on it. And I thought I'd enjoy the franchise, but I had no idea how much fun I'd have. I mean, these characters are a blast. And the fans are incredible. G.I. Joe fans are incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well, G.I. Joe remains a very popular franchise. It's like Transformers, all from that era where, I guess this was like 70s, 80s when this kind of stuff became very, very popular. Of course, when I was a kid, I had a G.I. Joe doll back in those days. And, you know, you could dress him up in different uniforms and things like that. He could be any one of the different Navy or Army or any of those kinds of or Marines. So he was a very popular character. It was interesting to me because I think when the comics and the animated series stuff came out, it made him a very different guy. And introduced a lot of different Joes. So that's kind of a neat thing to see the franchise evolve, because that doesn't often happen with franchises. You know, most people, they're tied to what's been already. But when you get a chance to introduce some new characters, that's kind of cool.
Well, when G.I. Joe was introduced, I mean, I was lucky enough to have two. I thought I was the luckiest kid in the world. I had two G.I. Joes. then I met as an adult, I met my buddy Bo Smith, and he had like 50. I was like,
oh wow.
Would your dad win the lottery? I mean, but he, so, and the unique thing about Joe is that, you know, when he was created, he had no personality. You took him out of the box and you gave him a personality. Mm-hmm. And he was your Joe and he did what you wanted him to do. And, you know, he was the kind of guy you wanted him to be. And then here comes Larry Hama and he gives 200 Joes their own distinct, very distinct personalities. And you read the file card on the back to learn about the guy. But it's still kind of the same thing because, you know, kids in the 80s, they might have gotten three action figures for Christmas, and those immediately became their favorite Joes because they were the first three they got. So they assign all this importance to those Joes, and that's something when I'm writing G.I. Joe, I have to remember that every single G.I. Joe is some fan's favorite Joe. Because it was their first one. So you got to respect them all. You can't be dismissing some guy just because he's obscure or was only produced 1 year because, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of kids owned that Joe.
Yeah, that's just amazing. I mean, it must be such a pleasure to deal with a franchise this big.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, it's not just the 80s nostalgia either. I mean, most of the fans I meet at conventions and store appearances, most of them are people that are either recently in the service or serving now. I mean, I meet so many great guys and women just back from Afghanistan or just getting ready to go. And I said the other day on Facebook that, you know, I probably have more heroes in the G.I. Joe fan base than any other fan base ever.
Wow, that's cool. Really neat. So I guess you're planning to stay with that for some time.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's me. I stay with the book till the wheels come off. I just tend to stick around. I mean, you know, you do all the hard work of getting used to the characters and learning them and giving them their own voice, and, you know, why leave?
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Being a big Batman fan, I got to talk with you a little bit about those characters and the wonderful things you did with those. For the longest time, I would read your stuff, and you did basically everybody in the Bat family you wrote. You wrote Commissioner Gordon's stories. You wrote Batgirl, Batman, of course, Nightwing, Robin. You did the whole family, and I just knew that I was going to get a good Bat story if I picked up a book with your name on it. So I just loved all those Batman stories, and they're still some of my very favorite Batman stories of all time.
Oh, well, thank you.
Recently, of course, the movie came out, and one of the characters that you co-created was in it, Bane, and you may be a little tired of talking about it this far into it.
No, not really.
But, you know, Bane was in the film, and were you involved in that process?
No, I was just told about it. I was told that there was a likelihood they would use him, and then, you know, it became, like everything in Hollywood, you don't believe it till you see it. And then over a course of a couple of years, it became pretty obvious they were very serious. Christopher Nolan was very serious about using Bane in the third film.
I thought they used him real well in the movie. I mean, and, of course, I thought they used him real well in the comics, too. I've always thought, and Bane's, of course, been in the animated series, too.
Yes.
Bruce Timm and group picked him up and used him quite a lot. If ever there was somebody they wanted to challenge Batman physically, they would use Bane. And I like the fact that he was kind of a mean guy, you know? He was kind of a nasty when it came to stuff like that. Was it interesting to watch this character sort of grow and go in different directions as different creators got to use him?
Well, it was kind of like a dream come true for Graham Nolan and I to see a character created become an iconic villain. I mean, he joined the Batman's Rose Gallery to become one of the top villains, and that doesn't happen very often. I mean, that happens once every few decades. And there's been some really great villains created over the years since the classic ones, but none of them stuck. I mean, I particularly love the Ventriloquist. Alan Grant created him. Absolutely brilliant idea, and funny, but sinister and scary as well. And he was on the cartoon show, but he didn't stick the way Bane stuck. And I think the reason is just what you said. When you need someone to give Batman a real challenge, Bane is the one with the physicality to give Batman a real challenge. And I think that's part of the reason that he stuck around. He serves a purpose in the Rogues Gallery. But, you know, that, you know, seeing him, you know, on cartoons and become toys and then finally a movie, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it must be something, because especially with Batman, given his history and his extensive rogues gallery, to actually create somebody who sticks around, I mean, that must be very satisfying for you.
Yeah, I mean, for him to basically stand up on the podium with, you know, the Joker, Catwoman, Penguin, you know, to be in that group, he's not a second-tier villain. He really did rise to the top of all that. I mean, that's like a dream come true. I mean, just writing Batman was a dream come true for me. I never thought I'd ever get to write Batman, but I got tapped for it. And then to add a character, an indelible character to the canon, I never thought that would happen.
Yeah. Just amazing to me, because it's so great when you actually get to contribute something that people really enjoy. I mean, so many things come and go. Like John Byrne developed this, I can't remember the name of the female character. She would go around and collect things. She was like a start with an M. Can't remember the name of it. But anyway.
A magpie.
Magpie, that's right. And he was the only one that really used her very much. And I was always sorry to see her, because Batman doesn't have a lot of female foes. Catwoman, Poison Ivy, but right. Other than that, there's not a lot of female villains for him to fight. But it would have been nice to see some of those stick around. But Bane is just here forever. I think he's always going to be one of Batman's first tier baddies, so I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. And I feel John Byrne's pain, because, I mean, there's things that I've used in comics that I thought, well, somebody else will pick up on this. No one ever does. I mean, Graham and I created Batman's subway rocket, the vehicle that he could ride on the rails throughout Gotham's extensive subway system. And we thought everybody else would pick up on it because it was such a cool concept, but nobody ever did. So it was a little bit of a letdown. We thought, well, it's such a cool vehicle. We thought it would stick around.
Well, Grant Morrison came up with a flying car, which I'm not sure that was Batman to me. That was more Flash Gordon, but, you know, he had his, but now that's apparently vanished as well. So it's tough to put stuff into Batman and have it stick around. So
yeah, you can't do anything expecting that to happen. It's just sort of, it's up to the fans. It's up to the readers, you know, to decide, is this cool or is it not? Which is why I got the Bane assignment. I argued with Denny O'Neill at the time. We needed a villain to break Batman's back. And I thought, man, you can't create a character to be popular. How many people have fallen on their face? I mean, Wolverine practically created as an afterthought. Silver Surfer was, just a background character. You know, these things happen by accident. The fans glom onto them. And he said, well, if you think it's going to be so hard, you should be the one to try to do it. So that's how I ended up writing it.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because you have a history with Batman, do you keep up with what Batman's doing currently?
No, it's like seeing your kids go off with someone else.
Yeah.
do I really want to look at it? You know, I see on message boards people will say, well, they're up to this and they're up to that, but I really don't follow it. And it's not up to me. It's like an ex-president, you know. Just shut your mouth. You know, there's nothing you can do. You know, if you just carve, you look like a moron.
Well, I hope you get to do Batman again sometime. I'd really like to see. I'm sure you've got some other Batman stories you'd like to tell.
Yeah, I could take a crack at it again. I mean, I grew up with Batman. He's pretty much in my blood. And, the characters are such a natural fit once I got over the intimidation factor and, you know, and got into it. But, yeah, I'd go for that.
Now, you also did The Punisher for Marvel.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of people argue Batman and The Punisher are somewhat similar. Did you have to do something different with Punisher as opposed to Batman?
Well, as I actually had the Joker explain when the Batman and Punisher crossover, the Joker explains that Batman is the result of childhood trauma and the Punisher is the result of adult trauma because of the way they reacted to basically the same situation. Their family is killed. And the Punisher, I've always had a long-time fascination with guns, and Punisher's probably the most perfect fit of any character I've ever written. He's the one I still think of stories for, even though nobody's paying me to. And I see stuff in the news, and I go, wow, if I was only writing The Punisher, I'd love to stick Frank Castle in the middle of this situation. And I was a big fan of 70s men's adventure paperbacks, things like The Destroyer. And when The Punisher came along, I was when he first appeared in Spider-Man, I was like, man, this character is awesome. And I'm sure they conceived of him as a one-off villain of the month, but another example of a character the fans took to.
Yeah, because he's certainly been around. They've got him out in space and stuff like that now, which I never understand, but what do I know? I just think the Punisher ought to be the Punisher.
Well, the Punisher's concept is so simple that a lot of times it eludes people. It's very simple. He's the villain in his own book. I mean, he is the baddest bad guy. The only thing that makes him admirable or worth reading about is that the people he's killing are far worse than he is. It's kind of like the spaghetti western, where, you know, Clint Eastwood isn't the nicest guy in the world, but you want him on your side. And and he's certainly the people he's gunning down are worse than he is. It's as simple as that. But everybody wants to go back and re-explore his origin and re-explore his motives or come up with a story where he quits being the Punisher. And it's like, that's not him. You know, he's a force of nature. He would never quit being the Punisher for any reason. He's at war.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because he's got one of those characters I think they'll be around for quite a long time to come. I always love when a character like Wolverine or somebody takes off and nobody expects it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so many people say, well, I'm going to make this character or I'm going to make this team and it's going to be around forever. And then when it crashes and burns, they're very surprised. But like you were saying, nobody really knows what's going to take. And it's great to, when something does take, boy, it's a wonderful thing. And I'm sure it's very gratifying when that happens.
Yeah, you can't know what's in the audience's mind or what they're going to take to. I mean, my favorite example is when Jack Kirby brought Stan Lee the first pages of the first Galactus story, and he points to the Silver Surfer and says, "Who's this?" Because he wasn't in their original discussions. And Kirby just said, "I thought he needed a friend." It was as simple as that. You know, Kirby knew, Galactus should have somebody to talk to in the off moments, you know, and there you have created one of the greatest comic book characters ever.
Mm-hmm. It's just amazing to me. Now, it's interesting to me, too, because you've often adapted books into comics as well, because you did The Hobbit for Eclipse a while back and things like that. Do you like doing those kinds of things as well?
Well, it's a job. I mean, you know, it's hard when your mindset is, I'm going to make a bunch of crazy stuff up, and then but now you're linked to someone else's story. So at that point, I got to switch over to the comic book craftsman. My job here is to turn these words into a series of compelling static pictures that tell the same story, and that's where the challenge is. So I'm sort of more or less directing a movie based off of a book. And that has its own special challenges, also depending on the material. But I can say that when I was adapting The Hobbit, I probably had to read the book a total of 60 times, but I still liked it. I never hated it. But the hardest part on The Hobbit was we didn't have the kind of page count that we can get today, and I had to cut a lot of stuff, which that's rough when you have to cut stuff. I mean, I had to cut some of my favorite scenes simply because, well, they're my favorite scenes, but they don't really have that much to do with the story, so they have to go. But now you can do almost a page-by-page adaptation, so there's not as much cutting involved.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, interesting, you and I kind of grew up in the same part of the country. You were raised in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
So it's kind of interesting to me, and we're somewhere around the same age, too, so we probably have something along the same tastes and that kind of stuff. Pennsylvania is a very unique place to read comics. And what's interesting to me now, there's an actual artist from my hometown who draws comics. His name is Tom Derenick, and I always get a kick.
Okay, all right, yeah.
And when I think about somebody from my hometown, because it used to be when I carried comics around in my hometown, people looked at me like, are you crazy? What are you reading comics for? So now actually there's a comic artist, a guy who makes a living doing it, living in my hometown, which is kind of cool. I feel about that.
So, I remember I was up in Scranton one time, and this was like early 90s, and I was doing Robin and Punisher. I mean, my name was as big as it had ever been, and before or since. And my picture would appear often enough in Wizard that people knew what I looked like. And I was up in Scranton on like a day trip, and I walked into a comic shop. I'd never been in there before. I've never had this reaction before. The store owner was behind the counter on the phone eating a sandwich, and he spit the sandwich out of his mouth. So I imagine there weren't a lot of comic book guys traveling through Scranton.
No. Well, it seems to be more now, but it's just not that big of a comic hub as far as things go. Because now I live in the Washington, D.C. area, and so for me, I see more comics people down this way.
Oh, sure.
But now, as an experienced comic creator, do you like to create new characters? I guess you get to do the more crazy things with those kinds of characters. But you talked about how hard, and sometimes it's tough to adapt something. Do you like to do the whole thing, or is there something at this point in your career that you would like to do?
Well, I just finished a Lone Ranger miniseries, which was a long-time dream for me to get to write the Lone Ranger. So I got that one out of the way. But yeah, I'm doing a lot of creator-owned stuff now. I'm working on something with Graham Nolan. And, well, I mean, to be quite frank, the inclusion of Bane in the recent movie is going to be a bit of a windfall for Graham and I. And it'll afford me a little more time to work on creator-owned stuff. So I'm hatching stuff with Graham Nolan, with Sergio Cariello, an artist I've known for a long time and never got to work with, Bob Harden. And so I'm going to start rolling that stuff out next year. And that's fun, creating a property from the ground up. Mm-hmm. And that's really, if you're going to be a long-term comic creator and think about the future and think about a legacy, you got to create your own stuff. You can't just do the licensed stuff and work for the companies on a work-for-hire basis. You got to leave something behind that you did on your own. So I'll be concentrating on that pretty heavy.
Very cool.
Next year.
Now, one of the years that's back, interestingly enough, is Team 7. That's back in the New 52.
Yeah, I saw they even had my name on the cover.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, so that's back now. So you know, I guess when you create something, you never quite know when something's going to pop back up again.
Now everything comes back around. Everything, mm-hmm. and now that they're the stuff they're reprinting. I mean, you know, everything is available. I never thought I'd see this. So.
Yeah, it's interesting because digital has made things different too, because people can now carry comics, you know, their portable device, and they can be able to read them and things like that. So,
yeah, a big thing is libraries. Libraries will have a graphic novel section. So you're seeing stuff reprinted that you never would have seen reprinted for the comic market, but the library markets dig them, complete Peanuts from the beginning. I mean, that's awesome to be able to read the entire run of Peanuts or Little Orphan Annie or Dick Tracy. Mm-hmm. I mean, so for me, that's heaven to go back and see these things from the beginning.
That's great. Anything else that you're working on or that you'd like us to know about what's coming up that we should be able to purchase?
Well, I'm doing a series of SEAL Team 6 novels for Dynamite that are available on Kindle. These are prose, not comics. And I'm halfway through the fourth one. There are three available at a pretty reasonable price on Amazon. And it's a different, obviously a different medium for me and a lot more challenging. I'm a comic book guy. I never really wanted to be a novelist, but Nick Barucci at Dynamite offered me the chance, and I thought, well, this is a challenge. I should take it. It's worked out pretty good. They're selling pretty steady.
Oh, great. I'll have to go out and get that. I didn't know that because I tend to be focused on comics, so that's good. Well, Chuck, there's a lot you're working on, and as always, it's good things to get. I was going to talk about Winterworld, too, which I really liked. That was a great book that you did. That recently was republished.
Yeah, IDW published both volumes together.
Yeah, which is great. I loved reading that. It was a fun story, too. So, Chuck, is always a good thing. Like I always say, if Chuck Dixon's name is on it, be sure to buy it because you're going to get a good story.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So it'll be good. Well, much success, Chuck. Keep going with the good things, and we'll continue to buy your product.
Well, thank you very much.
When Gotham is ashes, you have my permission to die.
Together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review,
dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
And let's have a look at this week's comics. The book of the week for me is a real no-brainer. It's Batman number 13. The Joker's back and he's darker and more violent than ever. Oh boy. Here's the book's description. The Joker returns in the death of the family. He's crippled Batgirl. He killed Robin. What will the Joker do now that he's returned to Gotham City? What must Batman do to protect his secret identity and that of those who fight alongside him? Tony Daniel ended Detective Comics number 1 with the most talked about final page of the New 52 to date, showing the skin from the Joker's face hanging on a wall. Well, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are picking up on that plot thread in this issue. As long as I've been a Batman fan, I've always been less than thrilled with the Joker. So much of the time he's just less than scary. He ends up spending time with kids and others, and he's not very threatening at all. There have been exceptions to the rules, such as Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams' version, but the incarnation that has scared me the most so far was in Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight, with Heath Ledger making it tough for me to even look at the screen sometimes. Well, based on this issue, Mr. Snyder and Mr. Capullo may actually surpass those frightening examples. The book begins with the Joker appearing at the GCPD headquarters, and he wreaks havoc there before Batman arrives. There's an interesting comparison when the Joker appears in the dark, and then Batman appears in the light. That I didn't expect. And the dialogue from the Joker had me remembering Mark Hamill's voice, so that was really good. Snyder again crafts a psychological thriller that keeps the reader on the edge of one's seat. Also, Capullo's art is strong and gripping, so it is likely the best writer-artist team on Batman in recent memory just keeps creating amazing stories. And what Mr. Capullo has done with the Joker's skin mask is creepy to the max. Flies and all. I did love the die-cast cover, too. I'd read a lot on the internet about how great the final page of this issue was, and honestly, it is truly amazing. It left me with a lot of questions and concerns, so I'm going to be left breathless until Batman 14 arrives one agonizing month away. Wow, what a great book. You should definitely pick it up. I gave it 5 out of 5. That's the highest rating possible. This week's New 52 reviews started off with Batgirl, who also has a cool die-cut cover. She takes on Nightfall and wraps that storyline up. Batman and Robin shows Damian taking on zombies. Next, I enjoyed Frankenstein Agent of Shade as the main character delves into the Rot World event. Demon Knight by Paul Cornell brings Lucifer into the mix. And the Green Lantern Corps shows Guy getting a promotion and the beginning of the Third Army spread into the galaxy. Legion Lost has a team taking on the Cosmic Butcher. Also, Superboy is discovered by Jimmy Olsen in his title. Deathstroke fights Deadborn, and the Phantom Stranger brings Raven from the old Teen Titans into the New 52. Suicide Squad shows the non-heroes battling Regulus, while the Ravagers continues the story from the Superboy issue this month. So read that issue first before you read the Ravagers. Team 7 brings an old DC villain into the New 52. We talked about that with Mr. Dixon. And Grifter features Stormwatch taking on the book's main character. Also out this week of note are Batman Arkham Unhinged number 7, Before Watchmen Dr. Manhattan number 2, and Green Lantern the Animated Series number 7 from DC. Last week I talked about the Divine Wind graphic novel from Kickstarter, and it's out this week, so be sure to pick that up. From Marvel we got First X-Men number 3 and Uncanny Avengers number 1. From Image we got Hoax Hunters number 4, Morning Glories number 22, and The Walking Dead Michonne Special number 1. Oni Press gave us Stumptown version 2 number 2, and we got Archer and Armstrong number 3 and Bloodshot number 4 from Valiant. And those are the books that came out this week.
Okay, I want to welcome back to the podcast, Pete Casaza. Time for a monthly check-in and see how Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland is doing. How are you doing today, Pete?
Oh, pretty good. Not too bad.
Good. Why don't we start off with the Avengers vs. X-Men, which concluded during the month of September. How did that do for your store?
Pretty well. It tailed off towards the end, but I think the final issue, which just came out this week, was pretty solid, well-written. I think people were pretty satisfied with it. It wasn't an all-expansive series that, intruded on Daredevil and other titles as much. And people enjoyed it for the most part. I mean, sales initially were really pretty huge, and they were definitely down significantly by the 12th issue. But they had a solid core that maintained and, I think, enjoyed the whole series. So overall, it did very well for us. And I feel like we made a lot of money off of it, selling the variants and crossover issues and stuff like that. So I think it was very positive for nearly everyone.
Okay, that's pretty good. I guess there was a lot of people that were concerned about Cyclops and Professor X and things like that. What was the response to what happened in the book in your store?
It was kind of okay. People thought it was decent. I don't know if they're really convinced Professor X will stay dead forever, but, they thought there might have been some more, big events to happen in the final issue, but I don't think anybody was really disappointed or really just like, oh, it's the greatest thing I ever read. But most people thought it was pretty solid and enjoyed it, but it wasn't, dramatically earth-shaking, I thought.
Okay. So now the thing that's interesting is going forward, we're going to get a plus X, and we've got consequences coming up before too long. How do you think those are going to do?
Initially, there seemed to be some strong interest in them. I read the preview issue of Consequences, and I thought it was pretty well written. So I'm pretty positive about these. They're not going to sell the kind of numbers AVX did, but if they sell half those numbers, that would be really strong. Those would be great. I think Uncanny Avengers and A plus X, especially where you're doing team-ups, basically, of some of the most popular characters in the Marvel Universe, I think is a good idea. Especially, I thought they set it up well at the very end of AVX in issue 12 with Cap saying, we're not going to keep the mutants separate anymore. We're going to integrate them in to superhero society and prevent this from happening again. And that leads into Consequences, that leads into A plus X and Uncanny Avengers. And I think that's good. I think that's strong story base for these writers to tell some interesting stories that haven't been told before. So I'm pretty positive about the fall for Marvel.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the shaking up the creative teams and stuff like that. You're looking forward to those changes?
Yeah, I think for the most part they're positive. And it's good to do every few years. Hickman's had a good run on Fantastic Four. I think it's time to give somebody else a shot. You know, Bendis has been on Avengers forever, so it's time to give somebody else a shot, I think. So, yeah, I think they should. And the whole Marvel Now line has got people talking. There's a lot of interest in what's actually going to happen on the Marvel Now line. I've had a lot of customer interest, and even people who aren't regulars coming in asking questions and curious about what's going on. So I think it'll be good for everyone.
Okay. All right. Anything else from Marvel that took place that was of interest to you during September or that's coming up?
Yeah, the whole relaunch, I think, it's interesting to me that the relaunch they're doing, the Marvel Now, is very staggered. They're not inundating you with, 30 new titles in a week or 2 weeks. It's, you know, a couple new titles a week over 3 or 4 months. I mean, now we're going into January pre-orders, and there's still Marvel Now titles coming out. You know, Wolverine number one, I think, is pushed to January, and there'll be new books coming out next year. So it's kind of a really slow rollout, kind of one at a time. And I think that's interesting. I think, you know, it might get people coming in every week to see what the new ones are like. So it's certainly a radically different strategy than DC went with. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, because DC, of course, with their new 52, they basically barraged people with 52 new titles at one time.
Yeah.
During one month.
It was really exciting, and then people quickly got overwhelmed. So Marvel's really taking the complete opposite tact, I think. People are interested. They're not breaking down our doors, but they're interested, and it's kind of a slow rollout. So we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Okay, let's switch over to DC, which had 0 month. How did the zero issue sell for you? Of course, this is now a year. We've actually got a year-to-year comparison now. It's starting to happen. Compared to September of last year, we have September this year. And this, instead of number ones, we have number zeros. How did number zeros sell in your store?
They did pretty well. For the most part, they went up slightly from the issue 12. Not all of them. Some of them were up maybe 10% in sales, and some were down maybe 10% in sales. But overall, it seemed people was a good place for people who hadn't been reading some of the smaller titles. Well, I'll try the zero issue. You know, I haven't been reading this or that. Let me try the zero issue and see if it's any good. So that worked. And we ordered some extras, and we sold down on most of them. So it didn't blow the doors off, but definitely there was a slight bit of heightened interest in the zero issues, the origin stories. And I thought, certainly the ones I read, I thought were pretty well written. I thought they were pretty decent for the most part, and I think it did well.
And if you read them, which one was your favorite?
A lot of the Batman ones were good. The Green Lantern ones I liked. Even some of the titles that I hadn't been crazy about, I thought, you know, were interesting. I thought, you know, Grifter and Team 7 is more interesting elements being introduced. It's more organized now. It makes a little bit more sense. One thing annoyed me is, you know, they're still not clear on the Batman origin. Like, did he start 5 years ago? Or did he start 7 years ago? He started 5 years ago. How come he's got 4 proteges? You know, he's turning these guys out one a year. I mean, what's going on with that? You know?
Yeah.
That's a bit of a mess, and it's unfortunate for they're only 12 or 13 issues into this, and things are already a little confusing, or they're changing their mind. So that's disappointing. But for the most part, I thought, you know, things are interesting. I think the Superman family is getting more interesting. Superboy and Supergirl, they've got a lot of good stuff coming, looks like, on that. And I'm more interested in those titles than I had been. So.
Now, of course, Red Robin's origin now is all different. They've quite changed him quite a bit from the way he was before. They're trying to indicate that he wasn't one of the Robins.
Yeah.
That he kind of developed on his own, became Red Robin, totally separately.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's kind of unfortunate that this late in the game they're kind of coming to that idea now. But what can you do? You know, it's comic books and stuff like this happens all the time, so it's unfortunate, but well.
Now, you mentioned Superman. Of course, Scott Lobdell is taking over, and we got a taste of what he's going to do in the Zero issue. So I was just kind of curious what your reaction was to, because Superman's been kind of unstable. They've had Perez doing it for a while, and then we moved over to Jurgens, and we had Giffen doing it. We've really had quite a a lot of transition in that book. So do you think Lobdell's going to do better? Is he going to be more consistent?
I hope so. I mean, part of the problem is that Grant Morrison's been doing action, and nobody knows what the 5 years of Superman's history entails. You know, there's five years of backstory that has to unfold, and how can you write new tales about Superman without referring to anything that happened in the past 5 years? Mm-hmm. It's really kind of a problem. Mm-hmm. Action's been generally pretty good, and Superman has generally been kind of weak, and I think that's part of the main problem is. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to do with Superman. He's good in the Justice League. You know, he's good when he's dealing with other heroes of the past, but it's what does he do day to day? I mean, they've really struggled with that. So we'll see. Hopefully it'll be better. I mean, it's been okay. People haven't hated it, but it has not been one of their strongest titles. So hopefully with this whole Kryptonian invasion of sorts, you know, things will be a little more focused and a little more exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to see Superman get a solid place. It seems to me that he's more interesting in the other books. He showed up in Swamp Thing once.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in other places, and he seems to be, like you're right about Justice League, he seems to have a much more defined role in those kinds of things than he does in his own book. And that always makes me surprised, you know, because one would think that Superman's own book would sort of be the one where he would be the strongest, and yet he's not. So my hope is that Lobdell and company will make this a better book. Of course, Lobdell, I think, is writing Superboy, so he's got some experience writing super characters.
Yeah, Superboy was pretty good. I was surprised how much I thought how good Superboy was. Because there's a lot of freedom in that book to do some stuff, and Scott Lobdell, who's not always the best writer in the world, did a pretty good, decent job with that, I thought, and made it kind of interesting, gave it a whole new take that was decent.
Mm-hmm. So I guess we've got some new books coming out from DC, and we've got some of the older ones, and we've got Morrison leaving before long. So the new 52 will still be in transition. I guess it'll always be that way as far as things go.
Yeah, I mean, they have to keep things interesting. They have to keep people engaged. But, you know, Justice League, Ivan Reyes doing the art in Justice League should be really interesting for people, I think should be really good. Batman books have been super strong, and Green Lantern books have been super strong. Consistently. So, and Wonder Woman too, really started kind of slow and really has taken off dramatically for us. So, definitely their core books are doing very well. So, and the side books, your Earth Zero or Earth Two, as they're calling it, strong sales. First 4 or 5 issues doing very well consistently. So, people are very interested in that story. So,
yeah, that was a big surprise to me. I really didn't expect much out of it, but boy, it really went well. The most recent issue that just came out was really, really good, I thought.
Yeah, I think that was one of the strongest issues they've done. So the first one, I kind of liked the first issue because it was dramatic, but this, I think, since then, has been their strongest.
Yeah, I'm so amazed at it because I literally had terrible expectations for it. I thought it was not going to do all that well, but man, it's really been very interesting. I like the different take on the characters, and of course, they got Hawk Girl in there while Hawk Man is in the quote unquote regular DC universe. So it's very interesting. I like that they can do something very different with it. And
yeah, they're taking advantage of that they're not just, you know, oh, it's a little different. No, it's radically different from the regular DC universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that quite a lot. And World's Finest is interesting, too. I don't think it's got quite the buzz that Earth 2 has. But, you know, Power Girl and Huntress are always going to be a good team.
Yeah, the relationship between the two of them is very strong in the book. The book just isn't quite as exciting as dramatic, more of a traditional superhero book, but the dynamic between the two characters is very strong.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to other stuff. Of course, we've got The Walking Dead is coming back on AMC very shortly. Have you seen an uptick in sales for the Walking Dead books?
No, not recently. It's down slightly. As soon as the TV series comes back on next week, I expect a dramatic increase within a week or two. It's pretty consistent that the second it's on television, more people come on, and then as it gets the better it gets, the further they get into the season, more and more people start coming through the store. Like every Monday, I'm going to see a whole bunch of people come in Monday morning or Monday afternoon looking for Walking Dead stuff. Pretty consistent so far, and I'm pretty much guaranteed to see an increase in Walking Dead sales starting in 2 weeks.
Okay, because it's been interesting. AMC's been rerunning the original episodes, the first and second seasons, and I wondered if that had made any kind of dent in it, but probably not. So,
yeah, I mean, a compendium came out, so the second issues 49 through 96 are now in a second volume. So with two volumes, you can get almost the entire series. We sold a few of those. People are asking for volume 17, which will be the latest trade book. And this latest storyline has been very popular. So we've definitely seen interest in people asking about it, but we haven't seen a dramatic increase yet, and we will see a dramatic increase once the new episodes start airing on television. As soon as Michonne makes and the governor start making appearances and we see some dramatic stuff happen on the TV series, I expect a flood of people coming in looking for all the material they can get on those characters.
Well, there's a Michonne special coming.
Yes, that's coming
out
this week.
That'll be interesting.
So, that'll be good, too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that stuff goes. We always say that The Walking Dead is an hour-long commercial for the comic, which always makes me smile because I wish more shows were that way. I wish we had more. I wish AMC would kind of delve into other stuff.
AMC is making so much money off of this that other comic properties are getting a serious look over by other networks to really try to in movies. To try to develop them into a money-making franchise. So I think it's good for the industry. Anything that brings people into comic stores who aren't regular visitors to comic stores is really good. It could be better.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Now, how are the other comics companies doing? We're kind of into Image here. Mr. Kirkman, of course, has got his usual things. Thief of Thieves has changed writers. It doesn't have Nick Spencer writing it anymore. We've got a different guy on it. But Mr. Kirkman's still in charge, and then Guardian the Globe has just come out. How is Guardian the Globe selling?
It's doing well. It's not doing quite as well as Invincible, but I'd say 3/4 of the people who read Invincible are reading that, and it's going over fairly well. So it's a strong title. That's definitely good. I mean, Image has a lot of titles, interesting titles, and a lot of them don't sell well compared to Marvel or DC titles, but they're getting stronger, and Invincible is a pretty strong seller, and Guardian of the Globe is definitely above average in sales, at least for us, I think for most stores, compared to a lot of the other, you know, fresh, brand-new Image titles. So it's definitely above the curve, and I think it fills a void. You know, Image doesn't have very many superhero titles, and they don't do a lot of traditional superhero titles, which is good, because Marvel and DC do that, but I think it filled in kind of another little gap in the Image universe. It fits in with Invincible, but it doesn't focus on him, and it's a good title.
Mm-hmm. And how's Boom Studios doing these days? They've gone through a transition with their books. They had certain ones that were going on, A Veil and the Outcast, and they had Irredeemable and Inconceivable, and all those have kind of come to an end. And they're replacing them with new ones like Hypernaturals and Extermination and things like that. How are the Boom books selling?
You know, most of my customers really like them. They've been doing surprisingly well in Attitude. They don't sell huge numbers, certainly not as well as Invincible and Incorruptible, but people like them. So, again, they're finding their own kind of way. Their sales are small, but if you keep them on the shelf, people will buy them over time, and people are liking them. And they're always looking for something a little different. They're tired of the same thing every time. So, especially for people who don't buy comics on a regular basis, they come in once every couple months. They'll come in and buy a bunch of them, and they find them pretty enjoyable. So, doing well. You know, they're definitely a lower-tier publisher, but they're doing fairly solid performance.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does Avatar sell? There's one book that Avatar puts out that I really love called Hero Worship.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a teenager who gets superpowers that resemble Zenith, who's like a Superman character. And in the most recent books, everything kind of goes to hell in a handbasket for him. He makes all kinds of mistakes because he's new. And I like that book. That's probably one of the very few Avatar books that I get. Does that company sell very well?
Their books are pretty violent in general, but people who like them love them. They're so depraved and so shocking that people have a huge fascination and obsession with them just because they're so outraged and stunned they can't believe it. So it's definitely a small market, but it's a pretty loyal market. It's a pretty strong market. Most of their books like that sell pretty consistently. So it's an acquired taste or something only a small subset of the comics readers are into, but those who are into it do really appreciate that kind of stuff. So it's definitely got a solid market out there.
Interesting. Any other things that were like a surprise or that impressed you over the last month or two?
No, it's been kind of a slower month. There hasn't been anything dramatic, really, for us. You know, locally, we had two big shows. We had the Baltimore Comic Con and the Small Press Expo. So a lot of people went to that, those two events, and they were really well attended by almost all our regulars and a lot of people we see. So that's great. But we didn't see a lot of people in the store during those weeks. Just because they were off doing other things and spending money in other places, but still enjoying comics. So we had a couple weeks in the middle of September that were kind of soft, nothing dramatic, and then at the end things picked up again as people came back to pick up the Marvel and DC books and to catch up on stuff they missed and to visit the store. So it was a good month. It just wasn't a break-down-the-door month. Like, you know, last year we had September of the DC relaunch, and that was like people off the street breaking down the door to get in the lines and, you know, craziness and excitement. And this month, especially in comparison, it's been, you know, fine, but pretty low key. So I think October and November will be more dramatic with DC setting the direction for their second year and Marvel now really getting people interested in getting an idea of what they're actually going to be doing.
Okay, so that's pretty good. So I guess from compared to last year to this year so far, I guess this year has been an improvement.
Oh, yeah, dramatically. I mean, you know, August was a really good month for us. September was okay. I mean, last year we had the DC sales really kind of push things up. But trade books, you know, for the last 3 years, trade book sales in my store, and I think a lot of stores, have been taking a hit. And this year we've been consistently up in trade book sales, which is always a sign that people are feeling better about things. They have more money, and they're looking for good stuff to entertain them, good books to read. And September was a really good month for trade books, way, way better than last year. Last year we sold more comics in September, but this year we saw a noticeable increase in trade books, I think, which is really good. A lot of people are buying the 52, you know, 1-6 softcover and hardcovers from the 52. A lot of people are doing those. Those are selling very strongly for us.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and tell us the information on how to contact your store and how to stop by and buy stuff.
Sure. The store I work at is Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. It's 7315 Baltimore Avenue. Our phone number is 301-699-0498. And we have four stores in the Washington, D.C. area, which you can find on our website at bigplanetcomics.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and lots of other places. Check out our website because we have some signings and some updates we do on a pretty regular basis and some new photos and stuff we've put up. So it's pretty nice if you want to check it out.
Sounds good. And as always, it's a good place to stop by and get good suggestions of books. If you, they'll tell you what kinds of things you might want to check out. And I always like that a lot. So we really try
to read as much as we can each week and have something new and interesting to point out to people as they come in. We figure that's why they come in, to find out what's good and what's worth taking a look at. So.
Very good. Okay, Pete, very good. We'll talk with you next month and see how things went in October.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Wayne.
Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews, and with me as always is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
I'm doing great, Wayne.
Good. Why don't we go ahead and get to the news? What news should we know
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. September sales information is out. Interesting thing to note, comic sales were down 4.4% in September 2012 versus a year ago. September 2011, when the new 52 number ones were rocking the market.
Mm-hmm.
While the DC number zeros in September 2012 were successful enough to take 9 of the top 10 slots of the month, sales were down, let's see, I believe 5%, not enough to beat the number ones from a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
DC was the big winner, though, in the market share. 36.4% versus 31% for Marvel in terms of dollars, and 41% versus 33.7% for Marvel in terms of units. Marvel did take the number one slot with Avengers versus X-Men number 11. Graphic novels were up a healthy 14.4% in September as opposed to September 2011. Marvel also had the number one graphic novel spot with Thanos Quest, while DC had four titles in the top 10. Here's just a list of the top 10 comics and graphic novels. Avengers vs. X-Men number 11 was number 1. Followed by a whole bunch of zeros here. Batman number 0 is number 2. Then Justice League 0, Green Lantern 0, Detective Comics 0, Action Comics 0, Batman the Dark Knight 0, Batman and Robin 0, Earth 2 0, and Batman Incorporated 0. We got some four Batmans there in the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Earth 2 is the one that surprises me the most. That book has been the biggest surprise ever since it came out. I guess it is Earth 2 number 0 was in there. But, yeah, that was a very good book.
Mm-hmm.
I like that book. I'm always surprised at how well that book sells.
Yeah. So, for graphic novels, here's the list of the top 10. Thanos Quest, it's a reprint here from Marvel. Mm-hmm. Judas Coin hardcover from DC. Then you have Walking Dead Hardcover Volume 8 from Image. Mm-hmm. Avatar The Last Airbender Volume 3 from Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Aquaman Hardcover Volume 1 from DC. Now, this is interesting. Legendary Comics as the Tower Chronicles Volume 1 graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
That's debuted at number 6. They have a series of books there. The artwork's by Simon Beasley and I think Jim Lee did a cover for the first graphic novel here. And then you have Manhattan Project Volume 1 trade paperback from Image. Thief of Thieves, that's Robert Kirkman again. Trade paperback Volume 1 from Image. Then DC rounds out the top 10 with Batman Arkham City trade paperback and Batman Nightfall trade paperback.
Interesting.
Yeah. What do you think about the fact that comic sales are down from a year ago?
I'm not surprised, actually, because the number ones were this kind of phenomenon that happened. People were beating down the doors, as I was just talking with Pete Casaza about, to get their number ones. So the fact that it was only down 4% was a surprise to me. I thought it would have been more like 10%. But I was pleasantly surprised. One of the things that's happened, I think, that makes me happy is that DC now and Marvel are sort of on par with each other, which is what I was really hoping. Avengers versus X-Men, now that that's done, when that series is over and we get to the A+X and stuff like that, I'm going to be curious to see how this holds up. I'd be curious to see.
Yeah, September was a good month for DC because of its zero issues, but October's probably going to be a Marvel month with the Marvel Now stuff kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. For the mass market book sale, BookScan has the top 20 graphic novels. Manga takes the top. Here's a list of the top 10 really quick. Number 1 was Sailor Moon Volume 7. Number 2 was Naruto Volume 58.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, Marvel Avengers The Ultimate Character Guide hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Batman Nightfalls Volume 3. 5 was Avatar The Last Airbender, The Promise Part 3. Then you have Yotsuba, Volume 11.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, for number 7, Batman The Dark Knight Returns, Frank Miller's book. Number 8 is The Walking Dead Compendium, Volume 1. Number 9 is Alice in the Country of Clover, from Seven Seas Publishing. And then finally, number 10, Batman The Killing Joke, Alan Moore's classic tale.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting stuff there. In other news, some new Marvel Now teasers. Marvel has released teasers for two new Marvel Now series premiering in January. New series based, teased with the word amateurs will be by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Savage, which has claw marks across the logo.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be by Frank Cho. Good stuff there. IDW has some interesting news. I have a few news pieces from them.
Mm-hmm.
IDW has announced it is launching IDW Limited, a new division that will create ultra high end collectible edition of IDW books. IDW Limited is going to just turn you over, shake the money out of your pants pockets.
Yeah. Yeah, they're looking to get up in the ranks. They placed, let's see, I wanted to see, as far as September went, they were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like fourth in there. They were fourth in units, and they were number 3 when it came to market share.
Yeah, they're usually behind Image.
Yeah, well, Image, they were behind Image as far as unit goes, but not in retail. They were actually ahead of Image, but just slightly.
Well,
so they're looking up the income.
Yeah. So IDW Limited titles will feature original sketches, creator signatures, and special packaging in hand-numbered limited edition not available elsewhere. Mm-hmm. It will be offered in multiple tiers with various degrees of collectability. All IDW Limited products will be sold direct to consumer with no trade distribution. That's interesting there. Now, what do you think is going to be the first IDW Limited series?
Well, let's see. What does IDW produce? Star Trek?
Star Trek, Turtles, G.I. Joe, Transformers.
Yeah, all those good things.
Yeah, it's going to be Turtles.
That makes sense.
A 4-issue collection of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Volume 1, Change is Constant, with hand signatures from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle creator Kevin Eastman, series artist Dan Duncan, and series writer Tom Waltz. As well as original hand-sketched art from Duncan, packaged with each book in a specially hand-constructed deluxe case. Mm-hmm. The 3 tiers for this is going to be a 192-page 9x12 hardcover. Will be red at $125, black at $250, and blue at $350. So they're just going to take you by your pants legs, turn you upside down, and just start shaking money out of you.
Yeah. Other companies do those kinds of things, so I'm not surprised IDW is doing it.
Yeah. Two other bits of IDW news. IDW is planning a Mars Attack crossover in January. This crossover is going to include the titles Transformers, Ghostbusters, Kiss, Marvel versus Zombie, Zombies versus Robots.
Okay.
And get this, Popeye. Mars Attacks and Popeye.
That'll be interesting.
It's weird.
I guess if they have the franchise, they're going to use it.
What kind of makes me curious is why isn't G.I. Joe in the mix? You know, that seems like a perfect kind of crossover event. Mm-hmm. You know, Mars Attacks and the G.I. Joe team going at it head to head. You know, same with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's kind of missing here from the mix. Kiss.
Mm-hmm. Kiss. All right,
and then Popeye.
Yeah. That's very unusual.
It is unusual. And then my third piece of IDW news. IDW plans to publish a book collecting Dave Cerebus 300 covers. These covers do not appear in the Cerebus phone book collections. So people will finally be able to get their hands on it with this upcoming collection.
Yes. Wow.
Have you ever read the series?
I've read parts of it here or there. My brother was a more rabid reader of it than I was. It was okay. It was a little foul at times. It was a little, you know, Mr. Sims tends to do these kinds of things. If you know Dave Sims, you know what's going on with him. So he's, you know, I was at a convention one time when he was there, and he was just stoned all the whole weekend. So he was, you know, and if you went to try to talk with him, he had no idea what you were talking about. He was just basically out of it. And he had to be led around the floor by Sergio Aragonés, which was really weird. So it was a very strange circumstance.
Right.
Very odd.
Well, he's also releasing, you know, he did a Kickstarter campaign for High Society.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be digitally available soon. So, and that's, I think, probably the most celebrated part of the Cerebus work is this particular point where he started being less of like a Conan kind of clone spoof and more, you know, getting into, I guess, a deeper kind of version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
Todd McFarlane's in the news. He is suing Simmons. That is Alan Melanie Simmons, not Gene Simmons. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's suing his former employees, Alan Melanie Simmons, over the publication of Al Simmons' book, The Art of Being Spawn.
Oh.
Get this. The suit alleges that the book misappropriates confidential information and violates intellectual property rights.
Weird.
Al Simmons was an employee of McFarlane, and Melanie Simmons was the company's human resource executive.
Mm-hmm.
In The Art of Being Spawn, which this was published by Image, by the way, back in April, mm-hmm. Simmons says his life was the inspiration for the Spawn character.
Goodness.
McFarlane disputes. Mm-hmm. McFarlane also says the book discloses confidential information, which Simmons had agreed not to disclose.
Mm-hmm.
McFarlane objects to the use of his name and the Spawn brand in marketing the book, including the tagline with contributions from Spawn creator Todd McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
That appears on the cover. The plaintiff alleges that the copyright material was used without permission. Damages of over $75,000 is alleged, and an injunction is requested. So maybe you should pick up the book.
Yeah, just for the fun of it, just to get a hold of it. It's interesting because, again, this reminds me very much of the Robert Kirkman, Tony Moore business with Walking Dead,
mm-hmm.
that I think more money needs to grease Mr. McFarlane's palm in order to make this lawsuit go away.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying you were also the inspiration for Spawn, though. I don't know if there's any amount of money you could pay to make that go away. You know, he's going to dispute that because he's going to want to say this is an original creation.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
We will see. I'm sure the book's going to be just pulled.
Mm-hmm.
Palms will be greased to, like, just stop this whole thing, you know, I guess, maybe, but...
Yeah.
They're smart, but I don't think you're going to have any more of the art of being spawned.
Nope.
So what do you think was the number one movie in terms of DVD and Blu-ray sales?
This month, the most recently? Oh, goodness. Avengers, I would say.
You are correct. Ding, ding, ding.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers is number one by far
mm-hmm.
in terms of DVD and Blu-ray sales.
Mm-hmm.
Second, number two in the list, mm-hmm. The Dark Knight cartoon.
Really?
Yep.
I'm surprised by that because I that was original, but because I think what's going to happen is a lot of people figure the two parts one and two will come out together eventually, and they're probably waiting for the second part to hit.
Yeah.
Or the but I'm not surprised by Avengers. There was a lot of rabid Marvel folks who really loved it, and so I'm sure it did very well.
Yes. And then in the final bit of news here, comic icon Stan Lee. We mentioned before about him pulling out of. comic conventions for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason why is that he's recovering from pacemaker surgery. So, according to a statement announced to Power Entertainment, Lee, who will turn 90 in December, had recently canceled a number of appearances. And here's a quote from him. In an effort to, and this is a humorous quote, in an effort mm-hmm. to be more like my fellow Avenger Tony Stark, I've had an electronic pacemaker placed near my heart to ensure that I'll be able to lead thee for another 90 years, he said.
Hmm.
Now I must end this dispatch and join my troops, for an army without a leader is like a day without a cameo.
Okay, yeah, that's still Stan Lee, which is good.
Yes. So that's it for news for me. Do you have any, Wayne?
I only have one little bit that interested me. There's a dispute going on in having to do with the Flash.
Yeah.
I wrote an article for comicbook.com about the fact that Daniel West suddenly appears in the Flash number zero. He's actually one of the criminals that the Flash takes down in his very first outing. And he ends up being Iris West's brother.
Yeah.
And of course, the reason this is significant is there are some folks who are really big Wally West fans who had taken over the role of the Flash for a couple decades at DC. And they want him back. And so this is not Wally they're saying. All they're saying is that it's Iris's brother, but, you know, his middle name might be Wally. You never know. And he's gotten out of jail, and he's trying to get his life straight, basically. So we're going to be interested to see that. There's a lot of people online who are going, this is Wally West. When's Wally coming back? We need Wally back. So DC's kind of, I think, treading carefully and softly. I think we've had Barry Allen back as the Flash in the New 52 for a year. I think it's time to bring Wally back. I don't think he should be like Kid Flash or something. I think it would be something else,
right,
which would be good.
That would be interesting, yeah. Yep. Wasn't he killed pre-New 52?
Wally? I don't think so. I think he had a family at that point. It was kind of like The Incredibles.
Oh, okay. I knew they ended him at one point, and I just assumed they'd kill him. I don't really.
Yeah. No, he's not. He wasn't killed, but we'll see what other things they do.
All right, cool.
And that's all the news I've got.
That is the news.
Okay, how about we get into comics that are coming out? I think this is October 17th.
That is correct, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
October 17th, some interesting stuff. For DC Comics, we have under Vertigo line, American Vampire, Lord of Nightmares, number 5. Then in DC proper, there's Batwoman, number 13, which I'll be checking out, J.H. Williams, III. Before Watchmen, Minutemen, number 4, Darwin Cook. And then you have He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, number 3. So, interesting stuff there. Some interesting things from IDW. Rocketeer Cargo of Doom, number 3. That's Mark Wade. Then the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Annual 2012 goes on sale.
Yeah, that's good.
It's $8.99, but Kevin Eastman is the writer and artist for it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's his first time he's been the interior artist for, you know, the sole interior artist for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in, I don't know, over a decade.
Yeah.
Oh, he's writing and drawing it. And there's several editions. They're all $8.99, it seems like. You have the regular edition, then you have the Eastman pencil cover, Eastman retro cover, a sketch cover, and a turtle head sketch cover. So,
wow.
Interesting stuff. Image Comics has two new series debuting, Bedlam and Cyberforce. And then you have Walking Dead issue 103 going on.
Wow. That's timed well because AMC's got Walking Dead coming back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you notice, like, on the top 50 list of comics, too, for September, you know, Walking Dead was pretty high up there. I mean, yeah, before they were, like, you know, the issue 100 was, like, number one by far. But now the series is, like, in the, you know, 25 range, you know, and it used to be, like, much lower. So 100, it's boosted up. Over on Marvel, some interesting stuff as well. We have the Infernal Man-Thing trade paperback, $15. You like your Man-Thing? He's like Swamp Thing in a way. Then you have the start here of Marvel First, you know, before Marvel Now trade paperback. That's $25, big book. And then we start with the first Marvel Now title here, Point One. Issue number one.
Wow.
So that goes on sale, and they're ready to shake the money out of your pants here. It's $5.99.
Wow.
They're just willing to just grab you by the pants legs, turn you upside down, and shake you. Because it had multiple editions. Of course, there's the regular version, you know, Point One Now, number one now. Then you have Point One Quesada Sketch Variant Now. You have another Quesada variant, and then Young Baby variant now. So, interesting there.
That's odd.
It is odd. And it's October. It's Halloween coming up. So that Marvel has Marvel Zombies Halloween book as well, too. So, there you go.
Man.
That's the only list I see.
All right. Well, let me run down a couple of things that I find interesting as well. Yeah. We'll start with Marvel, as you did. Venom number 26, which is always a good book. You were talking about the Halloween. Well, of course, if you like the Marvel Zombies, there's the Christmas Carol trade paperback out for about $20. Yeah. Getting started on that. There's also an interesting thing. There's a Disney Publishing Worldwide book for about $5 called Marvel Superheroes number 4. So they're making sure that they get their the money out of the Disney and the Avengers stuff. Yep. Then we go up to Daredevil number 19, which I always like. Mm-hmm. Consequences for AVX Consequences number 2 of 5 is out. Mm-hmm. And Avenging Spider-Man, My Friends Can Beat Up Your Friends, trade paperback, $20.
What is that about?
That's the Avenging Spider-Man is one of the Spider-Man titles, and that's just a trade of the stuff there. Trying to be catchy with the title.
I hear you. My friends can beat up your friends.
Yeah, I don't care about that. Okay. Then we get to an Image. There is Chew, number 29. Okay. The guy who writes Chew has actually started writing Detective, and his first comic, number 13, came out recently.
Oh, cool.
It was actually pretty good. I was very surprised because Chew, in my estimation, has kind of fallen, so I'm very happy with that doing well. Yeah. Over to IDW, Cape 1969 wraps up with number 4 of 4. Mm-hmm. And we get Doctor Who number 2. Doctor Who number 1 just came out recently, so there must have been behind on that. Yep. There's Star Trek 14, Star Trek The Next Generation Hive, number 2 of 4. Mm-hmm. And the True Blood ongoing number 6, which is doing very well. It's apparently the True Blood does well in the comics as well as on the HBO channel.
Yeah.
So then we get to Dynamite. Dynamite has Green Hornet, which I like. Peter Cannon Thunderbolt, which was good. It was an interesting start. We'll see if it keeps going. Then, which seems like a weekly comic these days, Warlord of Mars, Dage of Thoris number 17. Man. It seems to be coming out a lot regularly. Some of these things must have fallen behind and they're catching up. Anyway, then we get to DC Comics, of course, which I have a bunch of stuff.
All right.
We get a bunch of 13s, Birds of Prey, Blue Beetle, Catwoman, DC Universe Presents. Mm-hmm. Then we've got Green Lantern, New Guardians. Speaking of Ivan Reis, he and Joe Prado have the regular cover. Mm-hmm. And there's a black and white variant. They're doing DC's decided to go black and white variant covers. You talked about Batwoman 13. There's also a J.H. Williams one.
Yeah, there's a variant for that, too.
And they're also listing that Arrow DC Comics New 52 store bag promotional item. Mm. That's going to appear, which will be interesting. And, of course, Justice League number 13, Legion 13, Nightwing, Red Hood and the Outlaws, mm-hmm. Supergirl, The Sword of Sorcery number 1, which is actually the second issue. That stuff always drives me crazy. Then we got Wonder Woman, which is doing well, and Young Justice based on the cartoon show, which is now switched over to the Invasion sequence. So, and then we've got, from Dark Horse Comics, they're putting out some stuff that's interesting. I like Michael Oeming's The Victories. Number 3 of 5 is out, so that'll be kind of fun. And they've got a bust for the Game of Thrones, Daenerys bust for $125, and a Dire Wolf bookend set for $80.
Yes.
So, yipes, that'll be interesting. So there's lots of good things to get. So that's all that I have. Any other things that we got to talk about?
Nothing I know about. I'm sure there's stuff. It's just I don't know.
Okay. And on that note, we come to a close for this week's news and previews. Thanks as always, Gianluca, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely, Wayne. Thanks very much for having me on.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to listen every week, but I've got something really special planned for the 75th episode, which is coming up. It's actually groundbreaking for me, and I'm sure you're going to want to listen. But until next week, keep reading your comics.
What's that?
Tumblr? Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
This baby works just fine.
So what do you think?
Does it come in black?